Chapter 16. A Different Point of Fugue. That evening, after dinner, the trials team meets again to practice for the composium. The dandelion seed is in my pocket with my composing notebook, which is full of mindless scribbles and frustrated dead-end melodies. I rub it between my fingers as I slog through the freshly fallen snow. A few flurries still drift lazily down from the clouds. I have absolutely nothing to show for all my efforts over the past 3 weeks. It's not for lack of trying. The problem is, every time I do try to compose, all I can hear are those angry, stinging notes that swirl around the memory of my dad. They block everything else, like wasps buzzing in my ears. It's getting so I hear them even when I'm not reaching for the music inside. The melody threads through my dreams. If I'm not careful, I find myself tapping my desk in time with it. Yesterday, Jai caught me humming it. I mumbled something about it being an old tune I heard in church. I think of Rachmaninoff. I read up on him after my last composing lesson. For 4 years, he moped around Europe, out of money and out of ideas. And he was one of the greatest composers ever. If he couldn't shake his slump, how can I? I slink into the shell and take a seat in the back, wearing a coat over my Mistwick sweater, the hood pulled over my head. It's too much to hope that no one will notice me, given I'm sort of the main event when it comes to the composium, but I hunker down anyway. Once we're all assembled, Mr. Pinwhistle announces that he has acquired a copy of Luca D'Alessio's winning spell.
Mia Jones has agreed to play it for us, he says.
Mia swans up to the stage and takes the sheet music Mr. Pinwhistle hands her. With a flick of her hair, she sits at the piano. Everyone else sits up a bit straighter, eyes widening, including me. I can't remember hearing Mia play once since she got here.
Amelia!
Miss Mott calls out to me. She beckons with one finger. Uncertainly, I stand and go sit next to her in the front row. What's going on? I ask her.
It's important that you study the music like a composer, she replies. Listen and try to understand what Luca wanted to say with this spell.
I'm pretty sure Luca was trying to say I'm awesome and the competition can suck it, but I'm guessing Miss Mott wouldn't agree. When Mia begins to play, I shut my eyes, trying to concentrate. I feel a tingle of curiosity. The spell is supposed to conjure a person's happiest memory. I wonder what it'll make me see. The day I became a full-fledged Mistwick student? The day I met my mom's ghost? It's hard to think at all with Mia's music. Mother of Beethoven, the girl is good. Cracking an eye, I peek at her as she leans into the piano, swaying with the tempo. Her face is transformed when she plays, her expression intense and focused, as if she's pouring her entire being into the spell. As if she's forgotten everyone else in the concert hall. The other students watch, captivated, as Mia's fingers perform a mesmerizing dance over the keys, sometimes so quickly they blur. The notes crash and then soften, forte to pianissimo, lifting and falling. Mia half rises on the bench, completely absorbed in Luca's piece. His music is good, but her skill takes it to an entirely different level. It isn't long before foggy plumes of white magic begin to pour from the piano and spread across the stage. I may not like Mia much, but I'm still awed by her talent.
No, Miss Mott says. Just feel the spell, Amelia. Close your eyes and listen with your heart.
On the other side of me, Mr. Pinwhistle gives a snort. I do as Miss Mott says. Leaning back in my chair, I feel myself start to relax. Not from the magic so much as from the beauty of the sound. Mia's music is a rushing river, and I float, helplessly caught in its current. A desire for sleep settles over me, and I start to lose the feeling in my body. I can't sense the chair I'm sitting on, or feel the slight chill in the air. Instead, I feel the tickle of grass against my bare ankles. I smell the sweetness of roses. My eyes open, and I see blue sky over green, green grass and a patchwork quilt spread out with a picnic on it. I'm much smaller, wearing a yellow polka dot dress and no shoes, and Mom sits on the blanket,
laughing under the brim of her wide sun hat. This must be my happiest memory, but it's not one I've thought about for a long time. We've just finished a day at the zoo, I recall. I skip around Mom and hum the spell the zookeepers played to call the elephants. Mom's flute rests on the blanket. Let me play it, I say, winding my fingers in her hair. Please, Mama? I'll call an elephant and we can ride it home. We're not going home, silly. Remember? Tonight is our big camping trip. Please, Mama? She laughs again and hands me the flute. I blow into it, but the sounds that come out are random squeaks. I'm nowhere near skilled enough yet to produce any magic. Then suddenly, someone picks me up and swings me in a circle. Mom grabs the flute before I drop it, and I fling my arms out and throw my head back as I spin around, 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 dizzy with happiness. But then unease stirs in my belly. I'm still being spun around, but when I look down, all I see are two strong hands around my waist. The person holding me is out of sight. I could see their face if I just tilted my head back a little more. I don't. I already know who's there. Suddenly, the memory changes in ways I know aren't true. The blue sky disappears behind fitful dark clouds. The grass withers, brown and dry. It's like someone's messing with the memory, getting the details wrong. And still, I'm spinning around. My arms and legs pushed outward by centrifugal force, my messy curls spilling over my face.
You can have the moon if you want it, baby girl, says a deep voice behind me. I'll lasso it for you, and you can eat it like a cookie.
Don't steal the moon, Dad, I hear myself say. Then the sun would be lonely. He laughs, but the sound is drowned out by a crack of thunder. With a jagged gasp, I open my eyes and jump up from my seat, back in the shell. I have to blink a few times before the memory fully leaves my vision. For a moment, it seems as if all the other students are sitting in that brown field under that angry dark sky, their eyes shut as they relive memories of their own. Foggy white magic seeps across the floor and hangs like heavy mist in the air.
Amelia,
Miss Mott stands up behind me.
What's wrong?
I'm breathing hard, my throat knotted. I bend over and put my hands on my knees. I can feel Luca D'Alessio's spell, thick and silvery and cloying, stealing into my mind, trying to tug me back under its power. I resist it with all my might. Finally, Mia brings the spell to a close, holding the last note as she turns to look at me. A smirk flashes across her face. That's when I realize that my eyes are dripping with tears. I run my hands over my cheeks, trying to wipe them away, but more keep coming. What's wrong with her? Someone calls out. Miss Mott tries to put her hand on my shoulder, but I turn from her and run down the aisle. Students turn to watch me go, some of them laughing. I can't get far enough away. I can still feel his hands on my waist, his laughter in my ear. I turn around, half expecting to see him standing there. That music is back. Those awful notes are clanging in my head, singing their spell of anger and pain. I try to crush them, but they only get louder. Miss Mott finds me in the lobby bathroom a few minutes later. I sit on the floor in the corner, knees drawn up, eyes finally dry.
Amelia, I'm so sorry, she says.
She sits beside me, her face crinkled with concern.
I should have guessed what would happen. I just didn't know how bad it was.
You don't even know what I saw, I whisper. She gives me a funny look.
You kept saying Dad over and over, honey.
I did? Miss Mott gently pushes my hair out of my face, tucking it behind my ear.
I should never have let you endure that. If I'd realized how deep this wound is.
Amelia, I think it's best if you drop out of the trials.
I look up at her. You were the one who wanted me to use memories of my dad to compose. You said it was fuel.
This pain is deep, Amelia. Composing means opening yourself up to those feelings, which can be good and helpful, but it's also hard, and it takes time. You don't need to rush this just to win a competition.
I'm not dropping out of the trials. If I do, nobody gets to go.
They need me.
And you need to heal. When somebody hurts you that deep, that hurt turns into poison. Poison that seeps into happy memories and twists them into painful ones. That's what happened back there, isn't it? A happy memory turned rotten.
She waits a moment, then adds,
Sooner or later, Amelia, you're going to have to let that poison out.
I think of the memory of the picnic, but when I get close to recalling my dad again, my soul flinches away, as if the memory is barbed wire.
You bottle up feelings this big and they just get stronger,
until eventually they burst out on their own.
It's starting to bubble up out of you, isn't it? That anger is getting too strong.
She puts her fingertips to the mood beads around my neck. They're fiery red again.
There's music inside you, Amelia Jones, that's aching to be let out.
Deep within me, the notes clamor and scurry, spiders in a bucket. My eyes start tearing up again. Angrily, I ball my fists and wipe them away. No, this is your fault. Rising to my feet, I glare at her. Something sharp and nasty twists inside of me, operating me like a puppeteer. I was doing just fine till you started digging into things that aren't any of your business. I can compose, and I don't need your phony beads to do it. I yank the necklace off, and the string breaks. Beads scatter all over the floor. Someone knocks hard on the bathroom door. Amelia! Mr. Pinwhistle's voice is even more gruff than usual, as if he's panicked. Matilda! Everything all right? My vision blurring with more tears, I push open the door, slipping past Mr. Pinwhistle. He takes one look at my tear-streaked face, and his eyebrows shoot up to his hairline. Then, with a thunderous expression, he turns to Miss Mott.
This is your doing.
I knew your touchy-feely methods would make trouble. Miss Mott rises to her feet.
Fred, this is none of your concern. Amelia is my student, too. She is most certainly my concern. And now look, you've gone and broken her.
I am not broken, I yell, and they both turn to stare at me in surprise. Kids are piling into the lobby, gaping at the argument, so I run the other way and leave through the front doors of the shell. I already can't stand to have Miss Mott prying into me. It's even worse when Mr. Pinwhistle starts, too. The night is cold and quiet. The only light coming from the gleaming windows of the school. I run across the grass to the one place I've always run to when I'm overwhelmed, the forest. The echo wood is silent beneath the snow. I miss its usual sound when the wind rustles the branches and the trees hum their soft musical tones. Tonight, all seems frozen. The fresh, unbroken snow seems to call to me. And I wander along until I come to the row of echo tree saplings planted along the forest's edge. They're taller than they were a few months ago, when the other seventh graders and I planted them there and became official students of Mistwick. The branches are bare, of course, so they look like little more than sticks jutting out of the snow. Mine is easily the most recognizable, bent at an awkward angle. I'd straightened it, thinking it needed to look as perfect as everyone else's trees. But then I realized that it was more important for it to be itself. So I'd composed a spell to bend it back to its original shape. Why had my composing worked then, with hardly an effort? Crouching down, I touch a tiny bud on the sapling, where a new branch is starting to grow, and think of that day. Every composition requires a powerful emotion to fuel it. I know what I felt the day I played over my echo tree. Confident, not just in my strengths, but in my imperfections too. I was proud to be every inch myself. And that was just a few weeks ago. So where did my confidence go? Why did I get everything I wanted, only to find myself right back where I started? Well, I know why. Because of him, my loser dad. The moment I saw him through my time spell is when everything started to fall apart. And a door deep inside me, a door I'd forgotten was there, opened wide. I'd lied to Miss Mott. I'm not fine. There is music inside me aching to get out, but it's angry, clashing music,
discordant notes and jumbled dissonance. It's no symphony. It's a cacophony. If I let it out, it might burn me up.